You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Payne Pendergast, and about to be joined right now by our Radio.com NFL Insider, Ross Tucker. Insider Calls, brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home, his show on radio.com/home, or search Home on the radio.com app. Ross, great to talk to you as always. How are you? Which game did I hear you doing sidelines on this weekend?
So first of all, I'm not that great. My daughter tickled me last night when I was not ready and I threw my back out. That is is life as a former player. It happens like 4 to 6 times a year. All I need is, like, honestly, if I sneeze and I'm not holding something while I sneeze, any like quick movement and I pinch the nerve in my back again. So when my show starts in an hour, Home and Home, which people can listen to on demand because I don't want them to stop listening to Payne and Pendergast, I will be having an IPA right when the show starts.
Yeah.
And I may even have an IPA plus medication, which is my version of going to the doctor to try to make my back feel a little bit better. I felt awesome Sunday in San Francisco. The weather was glorious. The only bummer was that the Packers defense didn't play any better. You know, I wanted a close game, and it was crazy. I mean, it was like every run by the 49ers, legitimately the stadium like started to stand up. Everybody was like, oh no, the safety tripped them up. Oh, Jair Alexander just got, like, it felt like it was going to be a house call every single carry. Can't ever remember that in an NFL game before.
I think that, Ross, I go back to my rookie year when we played Denver for the first time. I went up against that rushing attack, and it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. When you try to face a team that runs the zone scheme well, and we've seen it here in Houston, what it looks like when it's really firing on all cylinders with Kubiak, and of course Kyle Shanahan is all part of that lineage. But I remember thinking back in 1997, well, gosh, everybody's going to start running the ball this way, right? This must be like the wave of the future. And you fast forward 20-plus years, and it's just, it's the teams that know how to coach it and do it well. What's the difference between the teams that can run it well and the teams that can't?
I would say commitment and teaching. I think you're right. I think a lot of people tried it. Yeah, I can remember when we were in college that, you know, it was right after the Broncos had won those Super Bowls, and then Michigan was doing a lot of that kind of stuff, and they won the national championship. So we started to try to do it at Princeton, where I went to college, and looking back on it now, like, they taught it totally wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, totally wrong. Like, they thought the offensive tackle against, like, you'll appreciate this, Seth, like an underfront, which is a nose tackle to that side and a defensive end on the outside shoulder of the tackle.
Yeah.
They thought the tackle should get outside of the defensive end and the right guard should be able to hook the defensive end. Like, in the NFL, if a 5 technique loses 2 gaps because the right guard hooks him, he's fired after that game. like that never happens. Yet, looking back on, I get so frustrated now because we weren't very good in college, and you look back on it now, and it's because they were asking us to do stuff that they didn't realize was impossible and stupid. What you really do is you try to stretch that guy so he stays in his gap, and then you throw him out where he knows he's supposed to be. You get him going that way, and then you toss him out that way and create more, you know, horizontal space doing that. I'll tell you the one thing, though, that's really interesting. I don't know how this relates to the Texans. It probably doesn't, but that I think is really interesting about the Niners is they've incorporated a lot more gap scheme, a lot more like inside traps. Like, it's a lot more than just the zone scheme. And what I think makes them so good, like, their line's good and those guys work together. None of them individually are like great players, but they work well together as a unit. What makes them truly special and is kind of like zigging while everybody else zags is most teams don't have a fullback, and most teams, when they do run it, they run away from the tight end because their tight end stinks as a blocker. The Niners are the total opposite. They have a fullback in like every play, and they run it to the tight end. So what I've noticed is that, you know, some of the outside backers and even safeties, they don't really know how to fit against those 21 personnel runs, and they don't really know how to take on, you know, fullbacks and tight ends in that manner. And the two guys for the Niners are like absolute studs. I'm on the sideline watching them, pancake dudes, kill them. I mean, that's why they were getting the edge as much as anything else. Their tight end and fullback are awesome, and these guys don't know how to take on those blocks.
Yeah, space. Ross, you know, it's interesting because now even when they're scouting guys like linebackers and safeties, like they don't even really look at how well they stack guys in shed anymore. They just want to see if they can run or not. So there's almost like a lost art to playing old school physical football when they have to take those guys on. And it's like you're exactly right. The 49ers, it's not all zone scheme. And a lot of that started back with the Texans when Kubiak was here with Mike Sherman, and Sherman had a different, you know, style. And they just kind of realized, okay, there's times where you can't just stretch everything out. There's times where you just got to hit it up the middle. And then those two different modes complement each other. But I'm with you. I feel like the 49ers, for all of what people talk about with Kyle Shanahan's X's and O's genius, the most impressive thing to me about Kyle Shanahan is how well coached they are in their technique, and that the wide receivers give a damn about blocking downfield, and that all these guys just know exactly what they're doing. And frankly, it's a level of competence that I just don't see from the Texans offense. You know, I watch the Texans offense operate, and especially I watch as they block, and then I watch the 49ers block. And my question for you would be, how close are the Texans to that? How achievable is that potentially?
They're not that close to it. But what I would say is I don't know many teams that are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're exactly right. You know, their whole line, their fullback, the tight end, the receivers, they all block like they love it. You know what I mean? Like, most wide receivers are like willing blockers. You know what I mean? Like, they know they're supposed to, but they want to make sure that nobody rolls up on the back of their legs. A lot of the tight ends now are more or less like willing position blockers. Every dude for the Niners, like, they have like my mentality when I played. Like, they're not just trying to block. They're trying to like pancake guys, and they look like they're having the time of their life. Like, I'm on the sideline as Kittle pancaked B.J. Goodson, a Packers linebacker who was horrific in that game. And he gets up and, like, I don't know if he rolled the dice or rolled the bowling ball. He did, so, like, it was like he was making gestures after his blocks like it was a big 3rd-and-8 catch where he ran over two guys. Like, these guys literally have as much fun blocking as they do catching the ball or getting the ball. And I actually think the genius of Shanahan is that he just keeps running it. You know, I just think so many coaches on some level are, I don't know if they're insecure or what, but I don't think anybody thinks that they get called a genius or a guru by calling 47 runs in a game. You know what I mean? Like, they spend all week coming up with these fancy pass patterns and all these different route combinations and these play action passes. And it's like they want to show them off. And I think the genius of Shanahan, and thank goodness for him, is like, we're just going to keep running the ball outside zone every play. Every once in a while we'll run a boot or we'll run a reverse to Debo Samuel. But, like, to me, the genius is in his repetition and simplicity and his lack of ego that he needs to show you his fancy play-action pass schemes.
Ross Tucker joining us on Sports Radio 610. Ross, Eli Manning's having a press conference later on today. My guess is it's going to feel more like a celebration of a career and
I hope they do it like when somebody has filmed themselves and they played at their own memorial. I hope they filmed it elsewhere. And Eli's not even there.
A lot of eulogies.
Light some candles up there.
Right,
and like just
right.
Them, yeah.
Where do you come out on Eli's body of work as pertains to this debate that's been, it's been ongoing for years, but it's obviously picked up steam the last 2 days on his Hall of Fame chops?
Only guy I can think of, and I tweeted this during the season, at Ross Tucker NFL, who every time he took the field at the end of his career, he actually hurt his Hall of Fame candidacy.
Mm.
You know, for a lot of guys, the longer you play, the more numbers you stack up and you rise up the charts and you're third all-time rusher like Frank Gore or whatever. And longevity is usually a real plus and a real positive for guys' Hall of Fame candidacy. I actually think Eli's probably the only guy I can think of that I believe the last couple of years really hurt his Hall of Fame legacy. I think if he retired 3 years ago, before he got benched twice and before he lost a bunch of football games and played really poorly, retired at 35 or whatever, I think he would have had a stronger argument. I still think he's ultimately going to get in, two Super Bowl MVPs and never missed a game. And his last name's Manning, you know, and by the way, all the writers like him because he was nice and respectful to all of them. So I think he gets in. But I've never seen anything like it. I tweeted 2 days ago, guys, or I guess a little over a day ago now, that he's one of the few players I can think of that there's a big faction of people that think he's overrated, a big faction that think he's underappreciated. So I gave the poll options. We had almost 10,000 votes. The options were overrated, underappreciated, or neither. It finished 33%, 33%, 33%. Like if I
it solved people, nothing.
if I asked people, hey, try to make this poll so it's 33% each, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Look,
you know what I mean? Like that is absolutely unheard of. And I guess I would say I feel like there were times in his career where he was overrated, when people talked about him like a top five quarterback, but people just were so critical of him the last few years and just killed him so much on social media that he almost became underappreciated. And I appreciate him never missing a game. That's crazy to me. And also the way he handled everything with class the whole way through. I think both of those are why I would probably put him in the underappreciated category.
Ross, this is the one thing, because I hear everybody's arguments and how much importance we should attach to the Super Bowl MVPs. I'll say this. I'll see those arguments as long as Justin Tuck gets into the Hall of Fame first, because Justin Tuck, in the first Super Bowl, a game that was won 17-14, Justin Tuck had two sacks. The second Super Bowl victory, in a game that was won 21-17, neither of those offensive juggernaut-type performances. Justin Tuck had two sacks again. In two Super Bowls, Justin Tuck had four sacks. He was All-Pro twice in his career. And I don't know.
Two more times than Eli.
I wonder where are all the Giants fans clamoring and insisting that Justin Tuck is a Hall of Famer as well? I haven't heard a single damn thing about Justin Tuck.
It's funny that you say that, because yesterday on Home and Home, Nick Kostos joined us. He's a diehard Giants fan, and he said he did think in one of those Super Bowls that Justin Tuck should have been the MVP and that he was more deserving of the MVP than Eli was. But it is – I've never seen anything like this. It's going to be the most interesting Hall of Fame debate ever, because people believe so strongly and they're so passionate on both sides of the argument. Like a lot of guys – it's like you kind of like if you go through the guys this year, right? Alan Faneca, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. He'll get in eventually. Steve Hutchinson, yeah. Baselli, he was awesome. Yeah, I think he should be. Like most guys are like that. Eli, it's either absolutely or no way.
You right, know what I mean? Like, right. Like, I've never seen a more marginal candidate.
15, you're like, yeah, I'm okay with that guy. Eli's the one that like he. I think he eventually gets in, but it might be a while.
I've never seen somebody that's so contested have so many people say, I don't see why this is even a debate. Oh, there's not even a debate. Like, yep. That seems to be the leading argument right now.
Yes.
And it's driving me insane.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to debate
this.
The
no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up. My big thing is if you're the person that says, this shouldn't even be a debate, or if you didn't vote for Lamar Jackson for MVP, you should have your vote taken away. That is the antithesis of everything I believe and everything our society should be about. Taking away a vote, like people said that they should take away votes of the three guys that didn't vote for Lamar Jackson for first team All-Pro quarterback. I'm okay with people voting for Russell Wilson. I'm okay. If you say, listen, Lamar benefited greatly from Greg Roman's offensive scheme and teams having no idea who even had the ball on half the plays, and Russell Wilson had to bring his team back from all these deficits and win all, I'm okay with that. Like, now, I might disagree, and I might say I'd still vote for Lamar Jackson for the MVP, but this groupthink and this I won't even debate. You know, I won't even debate and not listening to the perspective or point of view of someone who disagrees with you. That's how we got in this mess in the first place in our society.
Ross Tucker, he is our Radio.com Sports NFL Insider, and Insider Calls brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. That's his show on Radio.com. You can go to Radio.com/home or search Home on the Radio.com app. Go check it out. Ross, we appreciate it. We're looking forward to previewing the Super Bowl with you next week, man.
Yeah, I think we just figured everything out. I think we just did it. I think we just solved everything. I'm glad.
All right, well, cool. We'll just exchange recipes or something next Friday.
See you, dude.
All right, see you, Ross. Have a good show. He brings up Eli Manning, and I think you and I both established over the last day or two, Seth, that we are both. I am a no on Eli Manning for the Hall of Fame. Are you a yes or a no?
Oh, I'm a no.
Yeah, like, that's what I thought.
I don't think it's even a debate. Honestly, I had a couple.
Get Ross back on the phone so he can listen to Seth.
It's just funny that
it's a no-brainer.
It is funny that Eli got the MVP in those games, too, because of two individual pass. They were not good offensive performances in those games. They were incredible. But he wasn't a top-five quarterback ever. The entire time he played.
He wasn't.
I honestly, and that's why I'm saying sarcastically, and these duller Giants fans can't even figure it out. Look, Seth, you seriously think Justin Tuck is better than Eli Manning? Should he be in the Hall of Fame? No, my point is, if you're going to use the Super Bowl MVPs as the sole reason he should be in the Hall of Fame and ignore everything else they've done in their career, then go ahead and slap every guy that played on those teams in there. Because he got those MVPs because of two plays and because he was the quarterback. There were other guys that had great performances on those games.
Yeah.
And the defensive players alone. Put the whole damn defense in there.
Yeah.
Put that guy that got – the guy that came off of substitute teaching, that linebacker, that came in and made a couple of key plays.
Make him
the MVP of that game.
So I'm prefacing this by saying I'm a no on the MVP – or no, I'm a no on Eli for the Hall of Fame. However – in the spirit of what Ross Tucker just said, I'm willing to acknowledge arguments that make me think about it a little bit. And I will credit our former colleague Nick Wright, who had this argument yesterday on his TV show. I saw the cut-up of it on Twitter. And he gave an argument that made me think, okay, maybe he has a better case than I thought. He'd still be a no for me. Mm-hmm. However, I thought this was an interesting angle to come at it with. And the argument that Nick made the argument first that don't bring up all these volume counting stats because that actually works against. If you start to get into a statistical argument
then
about Eli Manning,
it just looks like a guy that was adding on at the end of
his
career.
The stats, there are too many stats you can argue against Eli to trump the stats that people used to argue for Eli. The argument Nick used was this. He said that if you have a regular sort of average career like Eli, you need something spectacular in the postseason in order to raise the level of that career. And the question was, is what Eli did, not just the two Super Bowl MVPs, because that's a subjective thing that a bunch of writers are giving to a guy that's usually very narrative-based, as you just said. He's a quarterback. But Nick pointed out some granular facts of Eli's playoff runs that I thought were relevant, that made me think, like, okay, he's got a better case than I thought. And the main one was this. In his two playoff runs, first of all, he had to win four games in each of them, in part because they weren't very good, nor was he in the regular season, understood. But in the two playoff runs, in the 2007 playoff run, they had to go on the road three times and beat an undefeated New England team. And two of the wins on the road were against a 13-3 Dallas team and a 13-3 Green Bay. In Dallas and in Green Bay, and then you beat what was angling to be the best team in the history of the sport in the Super Bowl. That was 2007. In 2011, they beat three 13-3 teams on their way to winning the Super Bowl. They beat Green Bay in Green Bay. Again, that was the 15-1 Aaron Rodgers team, a one seed. They then beat the Jim Harbaugh coach 13-3 team in San Fran in the NFC title game. And then they beat New England again in the Super Bowl. New England was 13-3 that year. That was number one. The second thing, real quick, this one's quick, he brought up, was just a comparison with Peyton. In Peyton's two Super Bowl runs that Peyton ended up winning the Super Bowl because he did lose one Super Bowl, Eli's stats are all better than Peyton's, and they're all good stats. In his two Super Bowl playoff runs, Eli, 63% completion, 7.5 yards per attempt, 15-2 touchdown to interception, and a passer rating over 100. Peyton, 60%, 6.4 yards per attempt, a 5-8 touchdown to interception, and a 72 rating. Granted, one of those runs for Peyton was when he was noodle arm Peyton at the end of his career, but I thought that was interesting. The strength of schedule of the two playoff runs was the one that struck
me. Right, which is a great argument for that team doing a great job. They never scored more than 24 points in any of those. This notion that somehow Eli strapped these guys on his back and dragged them to it. The Giants' defense had not been good that first year. Let's look at, so that first year in the 2007 season.
Yeah.
The defense hadn't been good for most of the year, and then all of a sudden they came into their own at the end. They held the Bucs to 14 points. They held the Cowboys to 17 points. They held the Packers to 20 points and an overtime victory. And then they held the Patriots to 14 points. Yet somehow it was Eli's brilliance that dragged them to a Super Bowl. It was a hell of a team effort. It wasn't some magical run by Eli Manning.
Right.
And even if so, then okay, great. Then then Flacco was one game away. Nick Foles, if he just wins one more Super Bowl, should be in the Hall of Fame. The only arguments I'm hearing about Eli Manning are concerning, A, his durability. Okay, great, fine. Especially you're going to count these last 3 years where he's just a shell of a football player out there. You're going to credit. The worst thing he did for his team was remaining healthy the last 3 years. He should have had a career-ending injury, and the Giants could have moved on.
Then he'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. His arm's been a noodle the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And their arguments about the Super Bowls and the Super Bowls alone. And that's not enough for me.
Yeah.
You got to show me something that makes me feel as good. If anybody in their right mind, is there a single Giants fan out there that thinks he was anywhere near any of these top quarterbacks of the last couple decades? And no, they don't.
Yeah. I don't know. Giant fans might. They're a little wackadoo. The thing that really hurt my soul was McClain tweeting yesterday that Eli's a Hall of Famer, because I think McClain has been on the other side. I think he's been on our side of the argument. And I feel like McClain's getting swept up in all the force feeding of Eli. There have been two things I've been force fed this week that are making me hate those things more. One is Eli Manning's Hall of Fame candidacy, which I hated to begin with. Two is Zion Williamson, who I think is a delightful young man, but ESPN is force feeding him like he's the next LeBron James.
Yeah, that's what you got to do, though. It'd be good for the NBA if he is the next LeBron.
Well, it'd be good for ESPN, who is force feeding us Zion Williamson.
Yeah, but go for it. I'm all about it. Look, let's sell more sneakers. You know what? Sneaker culture has gotten a little. It's gotten a little too broad and diversified and whatnot. We need to go back to having one big sneaker company. Who is he? Is he a Nike guy? I have no idea.
Zion? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. He blew out a Nike shoe his 1 year at Duke. Remember?
He ripped right through it.
Right. Yeah, he ripped right through it. All right. We're off and running here on a Friday.
Yeah, he's definitely a Nike guy.
Yeah. Ironic. I hope they got him a more durable shoe than the one he had on at Duke that day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.